WRPI, Troy.
Welcome to Window on Islam.
Welcome. People of the world.
Welcome.
Do you know the truth about Islam? Or do you think it's about bombing planes and killing innocent people? Forget about the lies. I'm here to tell you how it really is. You deserve to know the truth about this beautiful way of life. People of the world,
Islam is all about peace. Terrorism, it doesn't teach. It's all about love and family and charity and praying to one God.
This is Islam. It's something you should know. I know it's really helped me grow. It does away with greed, filth, arrogance, and teaches us more.
Good morning. You're listening to Window on Islam on WRPI Troy 91.5 FM. Welcome to a special program today. Very interesting topic. We are working worldwide and broadcasting here in Albany, New York. We have with us some special guests today. We'll be interviewing and talking about the concept of hijab in Turkey. And we hope to have an interesting, fascinating discussion with Sister Merve Kavakçe, who will be joining us from Boston. And also we have Sister Huma Ahmed, who is a Muslim women's rights activist and webmaster of Jannah.org. Welcome to the community members who are listening from the Medina community. You're welcome to message us here in the studio. The messenger name is WRPI Studio. That's the AOL messenger name. You can message us here and we can pass your questions forward to our host or our guests who will be discussing the topic. You're also welcome to call us here at WRPI at area 518-276-6248. And we will be happy to put you through to this roundtable discussion. I'd like to just open up just with a brief question to our host or our guest, Sister Huma Ahmed. Huma, welcome to the program.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Thank you for inviting me.
We wanted to wonder if you could briefly give us a background on your experience with hijab or the headscarf, and tell us a little bit about what it means to Muslims and Muslim women in particular.
Sure. The word hijab actually comes from the Arabic hajaba, which means a barrier or a curtain, and it's the Islamic covering worn by women and men. Mostly we think of it as the covering worn by Islamic women because that's what is most visible. So the requirements for the hijab is that women should cover everything but their face and their hands. The clothing should be loose enough not to show the shape, be transparent, and it shouldn't be something that's very tight or very showing anything. So it's about modesty for Muslim women. And also Muslim men also have the same requirement. They should cover everything from the navel to the knees. It shouldn't be something tight. Also Muslim men cannot wear silk or gold jewelry. And the different styles of hijab vary across countries, like Muslim women in Pakistan, Muslim women in the U.S. We might have different types of clothing, but we're all covering in the same Islamic way. So one thing that I wanted to make clear is that Muslim women cover not for men. It's because we cover for God. Just mm-hmm. like in mm-hmm. maybe the Christian religion, they have nuns that cover their hair from way back in times. And mm-hmm. a lot of very devout Christian women also say that in the Bible it says for women to cover their mm-hmm. hair. So it's just an aspect of modesty. And it helps for people to understand that you're a person, a human being, and it gets rid of all of the things in the society that treat women as like sexual mm-hmm. objects mm-hmm. and things like that.
So do you think for you, is your wearing of a hijab part of your religious identity, or is it a statement to society that you don't want to be objectified in by the dominant culture that womanizes women? Is that something you chose to do, or is it something that you derived from your religion?
Absolutely. It's something that I chose to do, and it's been through a lot of hardships and obstacles. Like when Muslim women choose to wear the hijab, whether in this country or in Turkey or other Muslim countries, like well, here today, you face a lot of challenges and obstacles. And it's really something that each Muslim woman has to decide for herself, a personal choice. And it's just an aspect of our religion that we would like to practice more because of the values that it comes with.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of, I think, in this will relate to the theme of today's program, which is the wearing of hijab in Turkey. A lot of people associate it with the political Islam, or the manifestation of Islam on a political level. Whereas, I don't know, do you see that as being a statement, a political statement, where you view the hijab as a symbolic of your association with the Islamic movement or people who are working to establish an Islamic state or an Islamic system of law?
Well, like I mentioned in the beginning, I mean, there are requirements for Muslim men as well for hijab. It's not just the physical covering, but it's modesty and how you act and these things. So it's really a personal thing, but because it's so visible, it's become a symbol mm-hmm. of all Muslims who would like to practice their religion. And because of that, I think it causes a lot of fear in other people, and it might become political because of that, but it really shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see people protesting on the streets for women, Christian nuns mm-hmm. who would like to wear, or Orthodox Jewish women mm-hmm. who would like to cover their hair, or older women from older times mm-hmm. who have found that you have to cover your head when you go to church. I don't see anybody protesting about those things, but because the hijab is such a visible symbol, I think it becomes mm-hmm. politicized because of that.
Does it relate in any way to a type of not... I think a lot of people view it as kind of standing against American culture or becoming integrated within society. I think they see a lot of Muslim women as kind of rebelling against that. And do you see that? Is that something that you feel wearing hijab, or is it a religious thing for you?
It's definitely a religious, personal thing, and I think that a lot of American women and men should support hijab because this country was founded on religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you go back and look at how the Puritans dressed, it's a lot similar mm-hmm. to what Muslims mm-hmm. wear today, right? So we're really supporting that, and it's nothing against American culture. It's a personal decision that every Muslim woman works.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, there's organizations that of American women who are supporting Muslim women, especially mm-hmm. after 9/11, a lot of the hate crimes against Muslim women. There's an organization called Scarves for Solidarity
mm-hmm.
where ordinary American women who are not Muslim went and wore the scarf, the hijab, for one day just to try it out and to show their support for Muslim women who wear it. So it was something that was really touching to me,
mm-hmm.
and it shows how diverse and how much Americans actually support Muslims in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Huma, for giving us a brief introduction to the headscarf for the hijab, and you're welcome to contribute to the program. And we're going to have to move on a little bit, and with that, I'd like to welcome Shazia and Batul, Sister Shazia and Sister Batul, who will be hosting the rest of the program. I think we should have Sister Merve on the line from Boston. Just to check, are you there, Sister Merve?
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Sister Merve, my name is Shazia. I'm going to be helping Batul conduct the interview with you for the rest of the program. Before we start, I just want to say that I'm so excited about today's show. I feel it's such an honor to speak with you. I've been doing some research recently about your history and your past, and I'm just so proud to be able to talk to you and that there are people like you working for Islam. So I just wanted to say that before we start. I might be a little bit biased in the interview.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for myself as well. Thank you.
Before we start talking a little bit about your time in politics in Turkey, we wanted to ask you a little bit about what it was like to live in Turkey. Can you tell us a little bit about your and how it was growing up?
I grew up in the capital Ankara, and the city of Erzurum, and the very eastern part of Turkey, because my parents were both academicians and they were members of a university in Erzurum named Atatürk University, and my father was the dean of the School of Islamic Studies, and my mother was a teacher professor in the School of Literature, teaching German literature. I grew up there where Turkey was going through a tough time, a chaotic situation between the leftists and the rightists. So it was more of an anarchy time when I grew up. Later, I continued my education in a private school in Ankara, and then I was a medical school student. This is when I had to quit my education because of my scarf. And when I was growing up, I had seen my mother as a professor to quit her teaching position because of her scarf due to the ban that started in 1980 after the military coup at that time. So in a way, seeing my mother as a young child go through an unjust process, being forced to choose between her teaching position and her religion. Later on, as a medical school student, being forced to choose between my school, my future, and my religion, I think has a lot contributed on my determination on my for the emancipation of women process that I'm only a part of. Later, I consider myself as one of the very privileged ones because I did not have to take my scarf off because I wanted to study in medical school. I just quit my education there, and my family moved to U.S. where I had my university degree in software engineering.
I see. So your entire life growing up in Turkey, there seemed to be limitations on how you were able to practice Islam, and that was true also for your parents?
That is very true. Turkey is a very beautiful country, and as a congresswoman from Turkey, I love my country, I love the people, but unfortunately, we have some difficulties, impediments on the way of liberalizing Turkey, democratizing Turkey, and this is a process that has been going on for quite some time. So in that process, unfortunately, conservative Muslims, or not in the conservative sense of the American conservatism or European conservatism, but the practicing Muslims have been always challenged in their public appearance.
I'm reading here about the condition of Islamic schools in Turkey right now. It says more than 37,000 girls have been expelled from school for choosing to wear the hijab. 24,000 teachers have been fired. There's a possible sentencing to death of a mother and her two teenage daughters for participating in a political rally. Thousands of Islamic schools in the country have been ordered to have been shut down. 200 teachers prosecuted for violating a special anti-terror law. Teaching the Quran and Islam is forbidden even in the privacy of one's own home.
That is very true. Let me start from the last one. This is a law that was passed by the parliament in 1997 that bans the teaching of Quran to our children under the age of 12 at home or outside home. So this is very much regulated by the state. This is carried out in the name of secularism, but this is not the secularism that the American and the Western world enjoys. Mm. It is laïcité, it's a French word. We adapted laïcité, which is the word that is in the Turkish constitution, which is translated into English as secularism, from France when Turkey was established in 1923. But the difference between the Western secularism and the laïcité that is currently applied in Turkey is that in secularism there is the separation of the church, the religion, the mosque, and the state, and they do not intervene with each other. In the case of Turkey, in laïcité, the religion has no right to intervene with the state, but the state has every right to intervene with the religion, even in the boundaries of the home. That is why this very lastly passed a law in 1997 is a great example of that. Under the age of 12, we are not allowed to teach our holy book only, the Muslims' holy book, Quran. The ban does not cover Bible, Old or the New Testament, but only the Quran, at home or outside home. And between the ages of 12 till 15, the Quran can only be taught by state-regulated Quranic courses that are established in the summer holidays in the regulations of the state. The idea behind this is to close the school of the memorization of Quran, which is according to the Ottoman and the Turkish historical tradition that is carried out after the age of, say, 10 or so, when students are in the elementary school or when they finish their elementary school. Because of the enforcement of this law, the children at that age who are very much eligible to study Quran, learn Quran, and memorize it are barred from doing so. About the numbers that you have given, that is very true, about the students who have been expelled from universities, from schools, and so forth. And these numbers are the numbers of the years from 1997 to 1999. And the family, the mother and her three daughters, who have been facing the death penalty for attending a protest on the street, a legal protest, against the infamous ban on a scarf in Turkey, in Malatya actually, in I believe in May 1999. Their sentencing has been concluded, and they have been sentenced to 17 years of imprisonment for attending the protest, with the allegation that trying to destroy the secular system of Turkey.
For those just tuning in, you're listening to WRPI Troy 91.5 FM. You can give us a call at our number.
Area code 518-276-6248.
Thank you, Faisal. And we are interviewing today Murphy Kavachi. And I was wondering if Batul could give our listeners some history, background on Turkey, and some background on Murray.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me on the show. I also am very proud to be one of those who are interviewing Sister Mavi Kavakçı. She is one. She is a great role model, especially for me, because it shows that even though a woman who is wearing hijab, even though because of discrimination, she can stand up for herself and is fighting for the cause of Islam. Sister Mavi Kavakçı is a former member of the Turkish Parliament. She was elected into Parliament in on May 2nd, 1999, but because of wearing hijab, she was booed out of Parliament by members of the ruling Democratic Social Leftist Party. She is right now currently studying in the Harvard University Kennedy School of Government, and she is majoring in political advocacy and leadership.
I apologize. You probably should have started with the introduction before getting into the questions, but I was just so excited to start talking to you that I kind of overlooked that step in the process. But everything you said so far has been really interesting. Just to continue with the questions that we were asking you beforehand, we wanted to know what exactly sparked your interest in politics. From what I read about you on the internet when I did some research about you, you're actually interested in computer science. So I was wondering, what is it that inspired you to begin to get involved in politics? Was it all of these oppressive, unjust things that you saw growing up? Was it these incidents that you heard about?
I think it's a group of many things, many factors that makes one person who she is or who he is. I grew up in a very democratic family, the oldest of my parents' children, and I have discussed a lot of things, the world issues, local and the international issues with my parents when we were growing up, because probably has to do with their academical background as well. But it was interesting that even when we were very younger, myself and my younger sisters had the same vote in our family discussions as our parents. So I have been always inspired with what was going on around the world as well as the local community, including Ankara and Erzurum, where I grew up, and the world issues. The thing is, when you feel that there is something wrong around you, you have to feel responsible to make a difference, to make a change. I think American people very much can resonate with this. Therefore, especially being able to see some of the injustices take place in very close surrounding of mine, and going through some difficulties in my life later on, had put an impact on my determination, on my fight in the democratization process of Turkey. This is a civil rights movement that we are trying to carry out in Turkey. And I have to once more emphasize, I'm one of the very much privileged and the lucky ones who at the very moment residing in Harvard as a Mason Fellow. There are thousands of unsung heroes in back home. Many women, many young children, many young women go through a lot of difficulties, and they do not have a voice. And as an ousted parliamentarian, a former parliamentarian, a representative, I carry the responsibility of being their voice in the international arena. Now, about the factors that made me who I am and the factors who put me into this struggle have to do also with the globalization of the world. The world has shrunk. Information age has given us the chance of disseminating every knowledge everywhere, every second of the time. Because now the world has shrunk, we are part of a whole world, and we are all like part of the one body. If just like in Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam has emphasized on, if one part of the body hurts, the rest also are swayed by that, are impacted by that hurt and the illness. Therefore, Turkey is a very critically important country. The geopolitical situation in Turkey forces us to push Turkey into a very fast democratization process, and democratization has to come through the emancipation of women in Turkey. Now, in Turkey, unfortunately, the public sphere is only available for the secular-looking women, which means Western-looking women. They wouldn't have much of an obstacle on their way to come to the public positions wherever they want to serve to their country. Unfortunately, our hijab is, just like our sister earlier on in the program has explained, is an obligation in our religion. We have no chance, I have no chance, of leaving that behind me when I leave my home, because it's an order from my God, and it's a personal choice that I choose to apply. Therefore, when I choose to wear my scarf, then I'm ostracized in the society, and a public sphere is not given to people like myself. So it is a long-term process that is taking place, and I felt that I could make a difference as much as I can. I'm not responsible for more than what I can do, but I thought that just like anybody else, I was responsible to do something. And political arena has been my interest area, because the root of the problem comes from the parliament, from the laws, as well as from the grassroots problems. Therefore, some of our responsible people may want to choose to work in PTA meetings, may want to work in grassroots organizations, NGOs. My interest area has been politics.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience in politics in Turkey for those who are not familiar with your background? Can you tell us a little bit about your circumstances around your removal from parliament also?
Yes. I worked for the Welfare Party, which does not exist at the moment because it has been closed down. And I was the head of the Foreign Affairs of Women Commission. Later in 1997, my party came to office, and the leader of our party was the Prime Minister. Unfortunately, after 11 months in the office, we were ousted by a postmodern coup that was initiated by the military. After that, the party was closed down, and we established Virtue Party, which I later on was nominated as the first woman with scarf to be elected to the Turkish parliament. In Virtue Party, I continued with my work as the head of foreign affairs of the Women's Commission again, and later on, I was elected to the parliament. During the Islamic movement, the conservative practicing Muslims political movement in Turkey has been criticized for quite some time for not allowing women to come to parliament positions to serve in public offices where they can voice themselves out. Therefore, after the closure of the Welfare Party and the establishment of the Virtue Party, the party, executive board decided that it was time for women to be representing themselves, as well as the women of the party, which I was one of them, one of 200,000 women who have been working voluntarily for the party, have pushed a great pressure on the executive board of the party, Virtue Party. Therefore, there were a couple of names, and I was nominated as one of them, and I applied to the state with an application to run for the parliament from the city of Istanbul, first district of Istanbul, and I got my credentials. I campaigned like the rest of the nominees. Turkish parliament is composed of 550 members. So it was a very exciting rivalry, and after that I was elected from the first district of Istanbul as one of the MPs, members of parliament, congresswomen, in April 1999. And I was given the credentials by the state, Turkish state, as an MP, member of parliament, congresswoman, with the all privileges to represent in the parliament the people of Istanbul. Unfortunately, when I walked into the swearing ceremony on May 2nd, 1999, I was physically booed out, ousted by the so-called secular and Western, pro-Western members of the parliament. It was a difficult situation. Since to see my country to be represented in the eyes of the world this way by a very anti-democratic, anti-humane, I would say, attitude, and they were just having their deaths and screaming in one voice, get out, for 45 minutes. Basically, where I was sitting in my seat, waiting to take my oath when it was my turn. Right after that, the Prime Minister grabbed the mic and said, put this woman in her place. This is not the place to challenge the state. I was not trying to challenge the state or anything. I was there as an elected official by the people of Istanbul, and their way of ousting me was not only ousting myself, but ousting and denying my constituents from their very representation right.
Sister Merve, from what I understand, parliamentary rule does not specifically ban the wearing of hijab by members of parliament. Is that correct?
No, it does not. I was in there elected through the state approval. The same state that ousted me later on, the same state that stripped me of my citizenship and tried to persecute me. But we will come to that maybe later. The hijab ban in Turkey is all the way illegal and in very open contradiction with the international conventions that Turkey is signatory to. Now, the parliamentarians have a special situation because the parliamentarians are not public officers, civil servants. They are representatives of people, and according to the Turkish Constitution, Article 90, the bylaws, the statute of the parliament regulates the actions and everything that relates to the congressmen and congresswomen, and the Article 56 of the statute of the bylaws of the parliament clearly identifies that a woman, a parliamentarian, has to wear a two-piece suit, which is composed of a jacket and a skirt or a pants at the moment. This is the only clarification put there. So I was there as a representative of the people, and people in Turkey do wear scarves. This is part of our history, part of our tradition, part of our religion.
Sister Mother, when this happened, what was the response of the Turkish people? Was there an outcry from your constituents when this occurred?
Definitely. The emails, the phone calls, the support, physical support, and from far away from around the world, as well as the Turkish people, that was shown to me was enormous. And it has been enormous since then. But for our listeners who are not so much familiar with the Turkey and Turkish situation, the outcry of the people does not count much in Turkey. In an hour or so, when I was sitting in the parliament, the president then, Süleyman Demirel, labeled me as an agent provocateur for entering to the parliament as an elected official, as a representative, because I wear a scarf. And in 10 days, I was stripped of my citizenship and started the persecution for instigating hatred towards people by walking into the parliament with my scarf on. The situation was I walk in there, I sit there, and all of a sudden they start screaming and yelling at me, get out for 45 minutes. And the rest of the is a political lynching campaign carried out against me, my two little children. I was a single mom then, my 94-year-old grandmother, and the rest of my family members, whoever was supporting me. I think the Prime Minister at the time was very clear in his order, put this woman in her place. Give her a lesson, teach her a lesson, so nobody else ever dares to stand up for what she believes in or what she perceives as her right and responsibility later on.
Sister Merve, 10 days after your removal from Parliament, you were also stripped of your Turkish citizenship. Do you want to speak about that a little bit also?
Oh, yeah. That was what was considered by the Turkish legal community, the professors of law in Turkey, as a great, great unlawful application.
So they understand that it was something that was illegal, like
They stripped me of my Turkish citizenship because I was a dual citizen of United States as well. And Turkish law encourages for Turkish people to become dual citizens as well as members of parliament. Therefore, we have about 20 members of parliament, like myself, who have dual citizenship from various countries, including U.S., but that was not the problem for any of the members of the parliament. It was only a problem for myself because I was wearing a scarf. Right after my stripped of citizenship, many American Turkish dual citizens residing in the U.S. have flooded to the embassies of Turkey with the fear that they would be also expelled from Turkish citizenship, and the answer was no, we stripped her out because of her special status. Fill out this very simple form with a smiley face sticker on the side, you'll be okay. We stripped her because she hasn't informed the Turkish government when she became the Turkish U.S. citizen. The plot that was behind all that was the decision was taken that I was not going to be allowed to the parliament as an official elected member. Although people voted for me, that was not an issue. Several generals in the Turkish army who have a great sway on the Turkish politics, obviously, as all our audience would probably know, has very much declared on television that a woman with a scarf will not be allowed to the parliament, period. And the laws, they are aside.
Sister Maza, from what I've heard and from what I've read, when you enter into parliament, the government gives you certain rights, and among those rights, you are immune from most of the punishments given. Now, when you were stripped of your citizenship, it was also it was a punishment, even though you still had your immunity. Can you talk about how they took away your immunity, and because of the Turkish government taking away, violating your human rights, what you are doing right now, in terms of taking action. And for those who are just tuning in, we are on WRPI 91.5 FM. We are interviewing Sister Maza Kavakça about her experiences with hijab in Turkey. If you'd like to have come online and ask any questions, the number is 518-276-6248. And if you are online, our AOL IM screen name is WRPI Studio. Now, Sister Maza, getting back to you, if you can just tell us about how the Turkish government violated your human rights and what actions you're taking about that.
Yes, I had, like the rest of the members of the parliament, my privileges, including parliamentarian immunity, as well as the rest of the privileges that come with it. But interestingly, I only kept my immunity. The state of Turkey, who ousted me basically, granted me the immunity, but not the rest of my privileges like housing, an office, and more importantly, my responsibility, my chance to serve the country, represent the people. But I kept my immunity for some reason. It's a funny reason. That's why the laws in Turkey are enforced for certain people, and God knows why it is like that. There's really no higher platform that we can complain about this, because the whole political system, including the judiciary system in Turkey, is very much politicized under this way of certain interest groups, including the military. Therefore, I had my parliamentarian immunity, yet that was ignored when I was stripped of my citizenship. That is why I sued. I had a case against the Turkish government for stripping me of my citizenship as an elected member, where I carried my immunities. I was denied all the way through the Turkish legal system because it's very much politicized, as I had explained. Right now I have my case in European Court of Human Rights, so I'm suing the Turkish government at that time and the Prime Minister who asked me.
I think we have a phone call from Sister Raihayu from Singapore.
Yes.
Yeah. Good morning. I'm just interested to know, what would your advice be to the woman out there in terms of their guiding principles? Should when we talk about woman empowerment?
I have difficulty in hearing the question. Would you mind repeating that for me?
I think if I understood Cicero Hayo correctly, she asked if you had any advice for women in the world in terms of women's empowerment. Is that correct, Cicero Hayo?
In terms of the guiding principles.
For women of the world and especially for women who are parliamentarians. Definitely, I think it's a very large question. In the aftermath of September 11, I think every human being is very much responsible. And as Muslim women, we carry a greater responsibility of trying to eliminate the prejudices and biases and some of the fears in people's eyes as Muslim women. Unfortunately, our religion has trying to be denigrated. And Muslim women are viewed and perceived as in a certain categories. Therefore, we carry a great responsibility of trying to eliminate those prejudices and show the real face of the Muslim women as open-minded, pro-peace, and as well-spoken and standing on their two feet, because Turkish, unfortunately, the Muslim women are viewed as oppressed and suppressed and all kinds of very negative adjectives that come with them. But especially the parliamentarians, MPs all around the world as women, not only as Muslim women, but as women, we carry the responsibility of eliminating discrimination against women, all sorts of discrimination against women. Because at the bottom line, we come and meet at the common ground that we are women, and around the world with this and that differences, we face the same challenges. Illiteracy, poor health care, domestic violence, and the like. Therefore, as women, we have to work shoulder to shoulder in disregard of without regarding the religious, ethnic, or country backgrounds, cultural backgrounds. We are bottom line women, and we have to support each other in trying to eliminate all sorts of challenges that we face today as women. As members of the parliament, as Muslim women, what makes a difference for us is the access to the platforms that many Muslim women, many non-Muslim women cannot have. Therefore, like myself, I have an access to the platforms where a poor little Turkish girl can never have access to, because I was a member of the Turkish Parliament. Therefore, we have to feel the privilege and the responsibility of trying to open doors in the name of those other women and be their voice in platforms in the international community.
Okay, we have a question from Eleanor calling from Germany. She says, she's messaging a question. She says, what do you think of parliament places which are reserved specifically for women? Do you think they should get the places on their own merit, or is it right to reserve places for women?
At the very moment at Harvard University, we are discussing this with a former Prime Minister, the first female Prime Minister of Canada, Her Excellency Kim Campbell. The quotas that are put in several countries for women, are they illegal? Should women take advantage of that or not? Honestly, my personal opinion, where there is underrepresentation of women, women should take advantage of every possibility to increase the number of representation of women. I know that this denigrates women in a way that because we might be seeing ourselves as minorities, although in number we are the majority, but this is the reality. Women representation around the world, except only certain Scandinavian countries like Finland and Norway, and more importantly in Sweden, in the rest of the world, in the West and in the East, regardless of the where we...